Josiah Royce, a Harvard professor of philosophy more than a century ago, made a striking comment about a book he had been reading. The book was The Imitation of Christ by the medieval monk Thomas a Kempis. It's a long meditation on the meaning of living a life along the path of Jesus. What struck Royce was the quality and power of love that fills that book. And what he said was this: this love has the strength of gazing. The strength of gazing. I have seen it. He sits by her hospital bed, looks with all the love in the world at his favorite face, and won't look away. Or the way a mother looks at her child while the child is playing or turning the pages of a book. Such strength of love lies in that kind of gazing. And we don't do this very much toward others or toward what is around us, because it requires pausing. And pausing is not our thing. We are more like people dashing through a great art museum, rushing past masterpieces, stopping only a little here and there to say, Rembrandt, Van Gogh, but moving on to the next room. Having seen really nothing, experienced really nothing, learned nothing. Why live a life made up of passing glances? And is it only because we are too preoccupied and busy? Or could it be that looking more deeply can make us feel uneasy? Who wants to look steadily at others or at circumstances that require more from us? Gazing becomes a summons to love. So, do we dread the strength of gazing? There once was a man, a good man, called Nicodemus, who paid a visit to Jesus at night. At night, to avoid being seen with the teacher. But maybe he couldn't see so well either as he conversed in the night with Jesus. And maybe this is partly why Jesus began to speak of how seeing rightly will change everything. He referred to an old, odd story in which the people who are wandering in the land of the wilderness are surrounded by poisonous snakes that come slithering into the camp. The text says it is a punishment for their complaining constantly. These countless horrid snakes move into the camp, desert vipers, hiding under the baggage, crawling up the tent poles, dropping onto bedding. They struck at the legs, the hands, the necks of the people, and the venom burned like fire as it move through the veins toward the heart, which it stopped. Fiery serpents, they were called. Well, the people cried out. Moses prayed for them. And then God gave Moses the weirdest instruction. Make a fiery serpent out of bronze and put it up on a pole. And whoever is bitten when they gaze on it will live. How bizarre. Dying of snake bite. Then stare at the likeness of the reptile that bit you as you burn and struggle to breathe. Take a long look at this. Do it. And you'll live. If I'd have been Moses, I'd have put something else on that pole. Something more positive, hopeful. Maybe an eagle or a mongoose. Anything that can kill a snake. Or maybe some great words of assurance. Trust in the Lord, look to the Lord, and you will be saved. Something more hopeful for people surrounded by rattlesnakes. But no. Look at the lifted up, horrible thing. Look at the wicked eyes, the grinning mouth that opens wide, the white fangs curving. Stare at the thing that is killing you. Well, do I have to? Why? Because that's what's killing you. Open your eyes and face it. And that will heal me? No. God will heal you. But not till you look hard at what fills you with poison. And those who did it lived. And the story points to us. Lifted up before us, for example, lifted up before us is the history of black experience in this country. Look at it. No, we won't, and by God, our children won't. Burn the book, silence the teachers. And it's not just those extremists, it is us. Who will not face up. It's true of all manner of ugliness that we are part of. Look, really look at what is caused by our capitalism, by our politics, by corrupted Christianity. Look, really look at what is happening in Gaza. Look at what is happening still to people in the LGBTQ community, and look at the desperately poor among us now. Look. Gaze. And all the more so, do it with humility and receptiveness. Knowing also that none of it can be fixed by us. But that only in deeper looking, in deeper comprehending of what has poisoned us and others, some possibilities begin to open. For newness to begin. And while we're at it, Can we gaze also at the sickness in ourselves? The poison in us of rage, fear, pride, prejudice, unkindness, terrible attitudes, indifference, hypocrisy, our sins. Not with obsessive self-accusation or self-lacerating, but in honest admission of where we have been doing harm to others, harm to ourselves, harm to what we might have been and still can be. There is strength in that kind of gazing as well. Not that we can heal ourselves, but that we can grow into being more and more able to receive what healing God will give. That's what it meant when Moses lifted up the snake and said, "Look at what is killing us. Take in the truth of it, so healing can happen." Jesus referred to that story in his conversation in the dark with the good man Nicodemus. But Jesus takes it in a truly shocking direction. He said, "Now I will be the snake." As Moses lifted up the fiery serpent, "I will be lifted up." And he means his crucifixion. He would be nailed to beams of wood, to be literally raised up, his body hanging there, exposed for all to see. And if they truly see, they will find themselves alive. They will see the snake. They will look at what has been killing us all. And what is he up there? What is his writhing body showing? The poison of empire, an oppressive colonizing empire, the poison of its insatiable appetite for wealth and its need to squash any threat to its power. And there is the poison of corrupted religionists too, committed to pushing out the people who don't fit their made-up definition of who does or doesn't belong, and who cannot stand the sight of real freedom. And there's the poison of violence and the poison of scapegoating and of prejudice and rage, of blaming. The poison of arrogance and smugness and fear. Look at it. That's the situation of all who are oppressed and all that is oppressive. Here converging are rivers of poison, some of which is in us. And now it is in him. Torturing, killing him as it is killing us all. I don't want to look. And we do not have to look. We don't have to. It's just that if we don't, we close our eyes to a crucial truth about this world and about ourselves, the denying of which closes the doors to newness. But if we do go on looking, gazing more and more deeply at what is happening there, we may begin to see a wondrous thing that within that darkness is wondrous love at work, divine love in unspeakable self-giving. We may begin to see what love is doing there. Divine love is suffering it with us all. Unspeakable love bears it, absorbs it, dies of it with all the world. And as we keep gazing, the dying form begins to blur, to change. And we begin to see that the figure has grown luminous. A fathomless compassion, impossible joy, and the arms are spread wide with boundless welcome. Then the lifted one lifts higher still, and the brightness grows. We see now that we stand at the center of the universe, and that in this infinite love is filling all things, and we are beholding the face of God. I heard of a priest who gave an unforgettable sermon one night, and the sermon had no words in it at all. Wouldn't you like that? He didn't say a single word, but he darkened the room, took a lit candle, walked to the large crucifix, and simply moved the candle slowly to the hands, to the feet, to the face. We could do worse than to fix the gaze of our lives precisely there on the truth of the world and the truth of ourselves and the truth of wondrous love. The world begins to look different. Our own compassion begins to be different, larger, deeper. And we are less afraid now to act. In the strength of that gazing, we know our need to kneel and to laugh again. And to live. To get busy. Living.